America Weekend. This is America Weekend, a new kind of radio because life doesn't stop on the weekends. I am Paul Harris. Thanks for listening. Knuckleheads in the news coming up. The biggest news story of the last week was the 2 days of arguments at the United States Supreme Court about gay marriage. One about Prop 8 in California, the other about DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. If you've never listened to the audio of a Supreme Court argument, and you didn't know how the court worked, you might have been surprised to hear the justices jumping all over the lawyers who were trying to make their appeal. They only really get a half hour, or in the case on Wednesday, an hour, to hear their argument and make their argument to the court. But the justices jumped in pretty much on the first or second sentence of the very first day, and then kept doing it for the next day and a half. No matter what anybody was saying, the justices had questions and points that they wanted to make. And here is one exchange I want to play for you between Justice Kagan and Attorney Charles Cooper, who was on the anti-gay marriage side.
Suppose a state said, because we think that the focus of marriage really should be on procreation, we're not going to give marriage licenses anymore to any couple where both people are over the age of 55. Would that be constitutional?
No, Your Honor, it would not be constitutional.
Because that's the same state interest, I would think. You know, if you're over the age of 55, you don't help us serve the government's interest in regulating procreation through marriage. So why is that different?
Your Honor, even with respect to couples over the age of 55, it is very rare that both parties to the couple are infertile. And the traditional
if a couple, I can just assure you, if both the woman and the man are over the age of 55, there are not a lot of children coming out of that marriage.
Now you hear the laughter from the crowd that was there at the court. It sounds like this was on a college debate, but this was at the Supreme Court this week, and just a small example of what went on there. Well, Jim Bennett knows a little bit about this because he used to be a law clerk for Justice Anthony Kennedy. Now he's an attorney with the St. Louis law firm of Dowd Bennett, and I've asked him to join me here today to talk a little bit about what it's like behind the scenes. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Those sort of things where the justices are jumping in is a daily occurrence at the court, isn't it?
Absolutely. Most people who have a hotly contested case at least expect to only get the first couple of sentences out before they're interrupted.
Are they looking for information, or are they trying to be like Professor Kingsfield and stir the lawyers into perhaps a corner?
I think they're trying to do one of three things. First off, they could have a legitimate question, but I think that everybody was pretty well set on their opening views, at least in this case. But they may want to get lawyers to confirm or admit away things that the justice thinks is helpful for their particular side. And in that sense, they're trying to pin the lawyer down to things that will make the rest of the decision a little bit easier. But also, the third thing that they often try to do is use the lawyer essentially as a mirror to argue back to other members of the court. Uh-huh. And so you hear Justice Kagan making that point to Chuck Cooper, who was arguing that, and then she could be really arguing with some other justice who has the view that procreation is a legitimate state interest.
You worked for Justice Anthony Kennedy, who is commonly thought of as the swing vote here. On many cases, it comes down to a 5-4 vote, and you've got 4 entrenched conservatives and 4 entrenched liberals, and he's considered to be the one in the middle. Does he think of himself that way?
I don't believe that he fancies himself the swing justice who has all of the power in his hands. There's a lot of issues that other justices become the swing vote on. For example, Justice Breyer is extremely unpredictable on governmental and privacy cases. But Justice Kennedy knows, I think, has to know, I've never talked to him about it, that on these major social issues, the court tends to go the way that he votes. But I don't think that he considers himself to hold the court in his hands on that.
So when you were clerking for him, tell me about the role of the clerk in the justice coming to a decision on a case.
Sure. The role of a clerk on a case like this, I think, is probably less than in most instances. But mechanically, how it works in most of the justices' chambers, and this is widely reported on in a small circle of people, but basically the clerks review the cert petitions, the petitions for certiorari, which is the way that a case gets put up to the U.S. Supreme Court to say, please take this case and decide it. The clerks will write motions on that, write memos on that that will be reviewed by the justices and most likely talk it over with the justices before they vote. So prior to those oral arguments you were playing there, the justices had a conference and a decision to take the cases in the first place. Clerks write memos and talk it over there. Once the court votes to take the case like this one, the briefs start coming in. And in this case, there were dozens and dozens and dozens of briefs by people who were interested in the outcome. The clerks would read all the briefs, likely in most chambers at least, write either short or even long or longer memos, talk those over with the justices before they went out on the bench, talk about what questions needed to be asked, and then would meet again after the argument to talk about, you know, the likely voting and opinion writing tasks.
So how much sway do clerks have on what a justice ends up thinking about a case?
Well, I think that on this case, for example, on gay marriage, the justices have extremely well-developed views on that that they've probably had for years or have thought about for years. And so in this case in particular, I would say extremely limited. The justices are all very accomplished lawyers and read the stuff themselves to get ready for it. So in this kind of case, the clerks have very little influence on it. Perhaps in other cases that are out of the justices' personal interest areas or are more, less well known, they could have more influence on what they choose to highlight.
All right, you've said a couple of times that you think that the justices all had firmly entrenched opinions going in here. What about the open mindedness and the fair treatment of every person who comes before the court?
I think that they do get that, but here you have to understand that these litigants meaning the people who are presenting their side to the case, have already filed hundreds, if not thousands, of pages of documents. And so I believe that the justices do have views on this coming in, but then they do carefully read everything that's happening. And it's conceivable that somebody read something, especially on these procedural issues in these cases, about whether the court should hear the cases at all, that they could change their mind. But they do so much work on the briefs before the argument starts that I think they have a notion of what they're thinking, and then they'll listen to the questions and reevaluate that. But I think they have a plan going into argument.
Now, here's the question that by law I'm forced to ask any legal analyst this week, even though I know that predicting what happens on the court can sometimes be a hazardous occupation. Do you think that you know what's going to happen from the court on both Prop 8 and DOMA?
I know that I don't know. I have, of course, talked it over with people and, you know, have my own predictions I make when we're chit-chatting about it.
Do you think that any of the justices can convince the other justices that they were either wrong or that they should lean in their direction?
I don't know whether they can do it in this case or not, but there's a lot of ability to talk about what's in the best interest of the court and what's in the best interest of how these things are decided. And I believe that the most likely place where justices will change or move their decisions from where they thought beforehand is on whether the cases should, for example, the Prop 8 case in California, whether that case is properly before the court because the state of California isn't even defending it anymore.
Yep.
And so I think it's conceivable that you could have some discussions and conversations and meetings with the justices where somebody who thought they should have taken that case initially and decided the issue decides instead that, well, why don't we wait? Everything seems to be moving in society pretty quickly here. Maybe we should give that more time to the term they use is percolate among the 50 states and wait a few years and see if we really needed to do this. And so I think there's a substantial chance that people will at least consider moving on that issue.
Okay. DOMA,
I think they're going to decide.
All right, last thing I've got to ask you. I've heard that above the Supreme Court chamber on the next floor up, there's actually a basketball court, which is referred to as the highest court in the land. True?
That's absolutely true.
Did you ever play there?
I played there 3 or 4 times a week, many weeks. The clerks play there quite a bit. None of the justices played my year, but we spent a lot of time up there. You spend a lot of time in that building, and there's not much else to do other than work and go up to that gym.
And I had that benefit of saying, I played on the highest court in the land.
Yes, I usually get that in very quickly in most conversations.
Jim, thanks for your expertise on this. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be on.
Jim Bennett is a former law clerk for Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy and an attorney now in St. Louis at the firm Dowd Bennett. I appreciate him joining me here on America Weekend. You are always welcome as well. Our phone lines are 855-538-TALK. That's 538-8255. The area code is 855, by the way. Don't be calling any 800 numbers or 888 numbers. 855-538-TALK is our phone number. You can also leave us comments on our Facebook page or send us a tweet at America Weekend. And you can also write directly to me via email, paul@americaweekend.com. Coming up, knuckleheads in the news as America Weekend continues on the Envision Radio Networks.